WNST, Towson, Baltimore. At Baltimore Positive, we are into the summer months around here, and you would think we're going to talk nothing but baseball, but you'd be wrong. A little football segment here. We're going to be out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, taking real Marylanders like this guy out for crab cakes throughout the community. Got a dozen stops this summer, including our 25th anniversary over at Costas. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving these instant lottery scratch-offs away, and our friends, of course, at Window Nation, who provide me with the fun floppy hat. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. It's all summer long, and you get 0% financing for 2 full years. It's football season for another week, and then everybody goes into the basement. We get to watch real baseball. We have, like, a real baseball team. Luke's going to be in Owings Mills doing all this. And I thought, this is a good time, sort of that midway point. We've been through offseason. We've been through draft. We've been through post-draft. We've been through the Lamarathon around here for months and months and months. That I would go back to some old friends and foes in AFC North opposing cities. Cincinnati's the best team. Cleveland's got the quarterback. Pittsburgh, what's Pittsburgh? Will Graves is here from the Associated Press up in Pittsburgh, one of our defending champions around here for all things Penguins hockey, Steelers football, occasionally even some Pirates baseball or some Pitt football. We welcome him back in from the Three River City where you're playing good baseball for a little while, dude. I almost called you when the Pirates came in here to regurgitate all that 1979 nonsense, but it's still Steelers. It's a Steelers world you're living in up there, Will, right?
You know, as good as the Pirates have it going right now, I think, you know, they've got another little winning streak going on. They had a terrible May, and they've bounced back, and they woke up this week in first place, at least for a little bit, in this really bad Central Division. So, yeah, there is having Andrew McCutchen back. I can tell you on a personal level, I had a chance to talk to him on Saturday during the recent homestand for a good 10 minutes. The first time we'd met, we talked one-on-one since he left because everything else had been in a scrum.
And you know him well, right? You know
him. Yeah. And it was like, I mean, I literally texted my wife when I got done and I was like, oh my God, I miss this guy so much because he gives them an identity. Like he gives them a guy, like this is the leader. You got a bunch of young guys on this team that are going to be the guys down the road, but he is sort of this, and he is, it's crazy. Like he is so happy to just be here. To be home, like he never moved. When even though we got traded to San Francisco and then went to the Yankees and the Phillies,
you still bump into him in the offseason, huh?
He's still, you know, he didn't. His wife is from around here. He's raised his kids around here, and you know, it's he's playing. Look, he's still got some juice left. I can still play a little bit. Can still swing the bat, and has given them, you know, somebody to rally around. And I think that it's, you know, they're not as good as Baltimore. My goodness, those Orioles, like you got to. Have a lot of respect. You know, like I grew up, I'm from Waldorf. I grew up an Orioles fan. My first game was in 84, I think. Cal hit a homer. Glenn Ford hit a homer, I think. And
Flanagan pitched that night. Who pitched? McGregor?
No, I don't remember. They played the Indians. It was in August.
By baseball reference, you can look that date up. You see the attendance.
No, I could.
Yeah.
And so just really impressed with sort of the way that they have what the Pirates are trying to do is what the Orioles have done. I mean, since Ben Sherrington came in late 19, took over the franchise, they had their minor league system was not good. He basically traded everything that was worth something to accumulate prospects. They've drafted well. And now you see some of these guys starting to come up, like their version of Adley Rutschman just got promoted to AAA yesterday. Right. So Henry Davis, the number one overall pick in 21. So like he's getting close.
You just mentioned the number one overall pick. You know how god awful you have to be? Like the Orioles are bragging about all these number one ones they had. And I'm like, dude, that's, you know, it's great that they're all like germinating and flowering and Kowser's going to be here. And right. Like all of the, you know, all these guys are coming. But like, they were trash like the Astros were when nobody was watching. Yep. But the Pirates have been trash forever. Hey, how about the Royals, right? Like the Royals were trash. They win. Everybody comes. We're out there to kick our ass. A decade later, they're back to being the Pirates. They're back to being like nobody goes like it was here.
Right.
Baseball's just effed up, man. It really is.
I mean, it is. I mean, when you think about it, you know, the A's have been in town recently, and they're on track to be the worst team in the history of baseball, which Major League Baseball, which is saying something. And yet they were a 95 win team, like what, 2-3 years ago?
Hey, the Rays, all they do is win and nobody cares. Nobody goes.
Yeah.
Right?
So like, but what Ben Cherington, the GM, is trying to do is build a system like the Rays, and up until the last couple of years, like the A's, where you know your resources are going to be limited, so you just try to just continue to stockpile and stockpile and stockpile and replace and replace when the guys that get good go make their money elsewhere, right? So I think that is, I mean, look, that's going to be a challenge, but they are, that's a challenge for down the road. But right now, I think there is a, they matter. The Pirates matter. And even in the early to midsummer for the first time since probably 2016. So that is a welcome. There's some juice around the baseball club, which makes it definitely more fun to go to the ballpark than it has been the last 4 or 5 years for sure.
Will Graves is our guest. I love having Will on, especially long form. I love that he's a Marylander, grew up a Caps fan, an Orioles fan, and all that. You've been how many years in Pittsburgh now? I mean, like
12.
I was gonna say over a decade. So I do want to ask you this because you are a transplanted guy there, and I know plenty of transplanted people here that would see me or my last name being Aparicio. This is my 32nd year on the radio. Our 25th anniversary of the radio station is August 3rd. So I feel like I've seen everything here. And the one thing that I could never convey to someone that, like my dad who died in 1992, right, would be that the Ravens own the soul of the city, but the baseball team, it's always percolated there because of Jim Palmer on TV. I want to ask you the ultimate Pittsburgh question, because when I came in and Tomlin picked me up at the airport in 15, and by the way, we spent time with McCutcheon that day. I saw him in an all-star game, like in DC, and I've only interacted with him twice in my life, and they both have just been really good interactions for a 38-year sports writer who interacts with athletes. I have a very positive opinion of him even going in, but he came over to the dugout when I had Tomlin there that day. But Tomlin picked me up, and he took me to that alleyway in Pittsburgh where all the Pirates, like where there's Clemente and Stargell, and like there's this giant, beautiful mural. And I think to myself, like, I almost came up there in 92, 93, the Sid Bream game. I was sitting on World Series tickets when the Sid Bream thing happened up there. And they never played that World Series, Bonds, Bonilla, that whole Drabeck, that period of time. I think to myself, like, Baltimore, Pittsburgh sort of mirror images, but Pittsburgh, a lot of winning in football, not so much in baseball. Their heroes died, right? Like Clemente and Stargell. Yeah. We still have Brooks Robinson and Jim Palmer alive. Cal Ripken. We have these larger than life people that Elrod Hendricks was an ambassador of biblical proportions for the franchise. While Bill Hagee, we had all of Clancy. I had Clancy. Clancy's serving beer for his 50th year next year. And I had him on the show last week. So like we have these legendary baseball things. But the owner's been such a jackass. His kid is a bigger jackass for all we know. They don't have a lease. They literally don't have a lease. So all of this baked into this. But I always think like baseball here, if we had a new owner, there could be a heartbeat of wow. I feel like the Pirates are too far gone because of the Penguins and the Steelers to ever be a number one there, right? Like I feel like a harder crawl for the Pirates than it would be for the Orioles in Baltimore.
The Penguins, obviously, with the success that they've had basically for most of the last 30 years, 35 years, certainly is a – but I can say that, like, I've been here long enough for the 3 years in a row they made the playoffs in 13, 14, and 15, and then I covered two cups, you know, and Pens won in 16 and 17, and I can tell you that the city – the defining moment for me in the city in terms of games played in the city since I got here – was the 13 wild card game against the Reds. They ended up winning 6-3, 6-4, something like that. That was the coolest moment in Pittsburgh. I think there is such, like there are people, much like if you went 30 miles down the road, 40 miles down the road to DC and asked fans of the football team there that were like me, that grew up major fans in the 80s when they won Super Bowls and were one of the classiest, you know, franchises in the league.
And now you can't even say their name anymore, right? You can say the Joe Gibbs era, or you can say the Riggins era, but that was you. That was you as a kid, right?
Right. So I think that, you know, I think there is a class of fan, a massive class of fans here that are just waiting for something to hold on to really cling to. And I think that if the Pirates got good and were good, like had a 5 to 7 year stretch of where they were consistently good, where the owner invested money, I really do think that they would. I mean, the Steelers are like it's too far gone. I mean, like they are they are a world class brand. That's what
the Orioles were too, right? I mean, you when you like the Orioles were that when Angelos
Right.
bought them and he wrecked them, like literally wrecked them and allowed the Yankees and the Red Sox to sort of own the universe and all. But baseball is also that's built into baseball and money. Right. Right. I mean, like
Right.
the Pirates and the Royals and the Orioles can only really be so
Well,
good, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, look, Bob Nutting's making his money, you know, the Pirates owner. He's not going broke anytime soon. What the fans are looking for and what you're actually starting to see is him and Ben Cherington, when he came on, basically was told, when we're ready to win, we'll start investing money. Well, they signed Cabrian Hayes to what is a rich for the Pirates, but not rich for baseball, but an extension last year. They signed Brian Reynolds, their outfielder, to a very reasonable 8-year deal like a month ago. They got McCutchen back on a 1-year deal. There is and Kutch wants to keep playing here. I can't possibly imagine him leaving. But you know, they are, he is starting to put his money, at least some of it, where his mouth is, which will get some of the fans off of his back. I think that they're getting close. I mean, you see like the crowds have been for the spring or, you know, have been very promising. They had 30 plus in the ballpark on a Friday night that did not have fireworks. They just came to come watch the team, which is a solid, but it's much the same way in Baltimore. I mean, look, I love Camden Yards. And that is on our list. Like we've been to Cleveland, we've been to Philly. My kid's a baseball nut. He's, you know, he's a 14-year-old baseball player. And
hold on,
you know,
your kid's never been to Camden Yards. He's 14.
No. And that's like literally, we're going to Maryland, I think, first weekend of July. And I'm like, well, are they in town that weekend? I don't think they are, but like that is on our list this year. I have a lot of affinity for the. I mean, I do think that the. See, when this is the Marylander in me speaking. I respect the Ravens. I think they're a very classy franchise. I love Harbaugh. I love the way they go. I love Piscotty. I love the way they go about doing their business. That they're interlopers to me, to a guy that grew up in the 80s in Maryland. They're interlopers. I think if the Orioles got good, I think the Orioles actually from the city. I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson fans that are people that like football and like Lamar Jackson and they like the Ravens. I'm talking like the heart of the city. It's hard to imagine if they got to a World Series. Like I just think, which it certainly looks like it's possible in the nearish future. It's hard for me to imagine. I think it would be much like it is for you. It would be bigger than any singular moment than the Ravens would have had at home anyway. Since
well, the Ravens have never really played important games here, right? The Ravens were always on the road.
Right.
They've always had the win or lose or die in Foxborough or Pittsburgh or wherever it would be. But Will, I would say to you in the modern vernacular here, when my wife and I obviously were thrown out, Chad Steele, Google it, right? From our seats, the whole deal. When my wife and I talk about great days at a Ravens game, in Baltimore. Now, I mean,
right. We
marched through New Orleans. I marched through Tampa. I've written books, but
home games
here. She and I talk about a snow globe game that happened against the Minnesota Vikings. That was the most fun we ever had. When you talk about January in Baltimore, you're talking about losing to Peyton Manning, you know, in 06,
right.
Horrible losses, right? But the baseball people here, the modern baseball, not somebody's 55 named Aparicio that remembers 1973 and when Vida Blue died, remembered seeing, you know, Catfish Hunter and Vida Blue come in and hating the A's, right? I'm talking about modern. They would tell you the Delman Young double. Dude, it was a division playoff game, right?
Right.
But the stadium roared. I was in St. Louis that day going to a Pearl Jam concert. I watched that in a hotel in St. Louis. But the people that were there that day, they talk about the Delman Young double. And that is, in this century, in these two stadia, other than the Cal Ripken 21-31, right? I mean,
right.
And I'm thinking of things that happened in the stadium. Even the Pope came, you know what I mean? Like McCartney played, you know. But things in the stadium, the Delman Young double at home is the biggest thing of the generation. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that's kind of weak. You know, I mean, like you got to improve upon that, you know.
I know. I mean, like the Pirates, even the year that wild card game, you know, there's a famous moment, at least locally, where Johnny Cueto was pitching for the Reds. He dropped the ball. Crowd was chanting his name. Next pitch, Russell Martin hits for like a 2 or 3 run homer. And that basically decided the game. But then they lost to the Cardinals in 5 games of the next series. And they haven't won a postseason series since
92.
I mean, so that, I mean, that's a long time coming, right? So I agree with you, but I think that there, you know, there is a, I think there's a great affection for the memories that the baseball team can create. And like the reason the Pirates get by, much like the reason the Orioles have gotten by, is because the ballpark's so beautiful that even if the team is terrible and, you know, you have some place to go on a warm summer night and hang out with your family and go get some Boog's barbecue or go get some of Manny's, you know, Manny Sanguian's barbecue out in center field, you know, go get some, pierogies, go get some crab fries, some Icy Light and go in and enjoy yourself. And that's why they've gotten and they've skated by on it. I mean, they never really, they bottomed out, but not really. I mean, like, yeah, it's April, May, not great. September, not great. But in the summer, like there is, it's hard to beat going to a Pirates game just for, so I think that there is a great family thing here. I do think there is a deep, deep respect. They're never going to catch the Steelers. I just think that's, we'd have to go 40 years where the experiences were flipped, where the Pirates
Orioles and the Ravens,
the
I guess that would be my point, Will, is that the Orioles and the Ravens, man, that ish flipped quick when Angelos was a turd and the Ravens won,
no,
and Billick and Ray Lewis, like it just was, it went from orange to purple overnight. It before my very eyes on my airwaves when I was the only guy doing this sort of work in the afternoons here 20 years ago when things switched. And I was a Raven guy from the beginning because the Orioles treated everyone like trash, everyone, and have for 30 years. And there's some backing up that has done here since the Wembley knee and the Ravens and Ray Rice and everybody in the organization lying about Ray Rice and the embarrassment of all of that. So there's definitely been, hey, the Ravens have plenty of empty seats. The Ravens market me to buy tickets that they took away from me that I was happy to buy for the rest of my life. So the Ravens have done some gross stuff in addition to Ray Lewis and Jamal Lewis and jurisprudence, like all of those kinds of things that have happened. The Ravens aren't the shiny star they were here because they have empty seats and people like aren't as motivated to go down and give them money as maybe they are to be on their couch. That being said, it's a Ravens town. And I'm trying to figure out what the Orioles do to catch that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think obviously winning helps, winning over a period of time helps, but I think they could be because I view them as the, it's been 25, what they moved in, what, 95,
90, 96 right? was 96. The first year. Yes.
Right. So like, I still think of them as the, I can remember going to a Colts Redskins preseason game in like 81 or whatever. Right. Like, so to me, to the Marylander in me who has not lived in Maryland since 99, I view them as like, they have absolutely taken over. And much like DC, the Nats won a World Series, like what, 4 years ago?
And it's over. And it's empty.
And it's over. And like,
for the Caps, when Ovechkin's gone, good luck selling those tickets. Right.
I mean, trust me, the second, I do think, you know, with the football team, with the new owner, I do think that there is a chance, kind of what you're talking about, if Angelos ever sells, it would take one 7-game winning streak by the football team to totally just be the behemoth that it was 30 years ago. Two playoff wins would make them the behemoth they were 30 years ago. Right. So I'm with you, but it is refreshing, you know, to cover meaningful baseball. Again, I'm sure
for both of us,
the guys that are the guys in the press box of the, you know, Noah Trister, our AP guy in Baltimore, and the rest of the beat writers are probably, you know, rocked, and all those guys are probably happy to cover. I mean, those are good, and they're young good, which is the best kind of good, right? I mean, that is the most exciting kind of good when it's young good. It's not like, you know, even, and like when they were in the mid-90s, I mean, Peter spent a lot of money to make them good. I mean, he brought in Robbie Alomar and, you know, they made what, the ALCS in 98. It got hosed.
Well, you talk about the transplants on those teams, dude. Right. I mean, I look at those teams and I say, all right, Surhoff, Key, Alomar, Palmeiro. I mean, like all of those guys were top of class, top of market. And then for a generation, we can't afford Teixeira. He's from down the street. I mean, we can't afford Adam Jones. Let him go eat sushi and play in Japan and then ostracize him. Exactly what you're talking about, McCutchen. Right. So it doesn't even matter generationally. I am fully focused on the Angelo side of this of, all right, you want a fresh start? Then stop lying at your press conferences on Martin Luther King Day about opening your books. You know, move back into the community, front face the community, be a part of the community, and then do the right thing with all of these baseball players, because the Watching the Lamarathon, and I guess this is where I can transition. Will Graves is here from the Associated Press of Pittsburgh. Watching
we were
the
supposed to talk
Lamarathon,
about football half an hour ago.
That's fine, but we clearly both love baseball, and that's fine. It's honest, right? And these are unscripted, these pieces. I would say for the Lamarathon here and the weight of all of it, right? And this summer has been a beautiful thing to be able to focus on baseball, but everyone comes up to me, Will, they've been good for 5 minutes. They've been good for 6 weeks. And everybody comes up to me and they want to talk about either Todd Monken or are the Orioles going to extend Adley Rutschman? And I'm like, whoa, dude, he's hitting 268. Hold on. Like, but Oriole fans are very concerned about the mismanagement of all of this. And they are at the point where Elias is going to want to deal some of the baby birds off and say to John, this pitcher, he's $28 million next year. And he's $11 million. What's left on the 2 months this year, we're sinking $40 million and three prospects into winning the World Series in 2023. Now, whether John Angelos has a belly for that. And again, I remember John Angelos when he was picking players for daddy and picking Sid Fernandez and Chris Sabo. I wrote books about that in the Peter Principle. So I lived through all of this, but it is interesting. These hard decisions that are made that the Steelers and the Ravens, for all of my differences with the integrity of Eric DeCosta and John Harbaugh at this point, as well as Mike Tomlin and everything that's going on at Pittsburgh with the family, these are teams that have made great, great decisions. And it's another summer where anybody, there's 20 teams that think they can win a Super Bowl in the NFL. And that's sort of the original sin of Major League Baseball, is that it's not structured that way. But football, I want to, Steelers, are you a believer? Are you a true believer in what's going on there, especially in this division where the other three cities feel aligned?
I think whenever I come on and do stuff like this, I say sort of the same thing. I think they built themselves. They understand that, like, they like Kenny Pickett. They like Najee Harris. You know, they like George Pickens. They like that offense, but they know that that offense is not, that Kenny Pickens is not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Allen. He's not, you know, the kid for the Chargers. He's not a guy that's going to go in and light it up and throw for 425 and five. He's not Joe Burrow, right? So they view themselves, and I think the Ravens, to maybe a somewhat lesser extent, although, I mean, look, the Ravens came in here last year with Snoop at quarterback, could not throw the ball at all, and they bullied the Steelers and beat them here, right?
With a third-string quarterback.
Right, with Snoop running the team in the second half. So for me, the Steelers have viewed, we can't win games 35-30. We have to win games. Like last year, I said it was 20-17. This year, I think they can win games 24-17. I think that they view themselves, what they've done in the offseason. When you look at it, they take the big tackle, Broderick Jones, out of Georgia. They get Suamalo from Eagles to be their left guard. You know, they bring in Herbig to be sort of the backup to the Mason Cole, and Mason Cole looks like he might not be, who knows what his status is going to be. They draft Darnell Washington in the third round, who's just a massive human being at 6'8", a tight end that really considers himself a third tackle and looks like one, although he's skinny. He is skinny. Like, I will say that, but the way that they are building them, they've built themselves, they are going to control the ball. They don't want Patrick Mahomes or Burrow or, you know, these guys to have the ball for 30 to 35 minutes a game. They want them to have the ball for 20 minutes a game. So a lot of Najee Harris, a lot of, you know, Pat Freiermuth, a lot of Deontay Johnson in the slot. That is the way that they have built themselves, that they know, at least in the short term, that they have to compete. This is not the Big Ben, AB, Le'Veon Bell, you know, type where they could light it up on any given Sunday. This is not that group. This is very much almost an analog version of football, a 1980s, 1990s. I'm not saying it's 3 yards on a cloud of turf or whatever, but it is very much intentional the way they built this team. It's to be the antidote to the Burrows of the world, to hold on to the ball and have the defense be fresh and good enough to win games, you know, by 3 to 7 points. That's how they're designed.
Are they the last place team in the division in your mind? Because I hear people talking that way. Tomlin's
I mean, like,
but I don't know why Browns, Cleveland's getting this sort of credit, but
I mean, like, if you watched, and I was here when, you know, they came in late in the season. It was Deshaun's fourth start. He was terrible. He was not good. I mean, I did not see a guy, and maybe does he get one pass? I mean, yes, I can you know, but he hasn't really played football for 2 years.
That's such a Cleveland thing to go all in on this criminal guy who winds up. Right. Like, how many playoff games is he going to win the next 5 years?
I mean, are they good? If Stefanski is smart and just keeps running the ball and relies on the defense, they can be a competitive team. But I just don't. No, I mean, I view them as, and they were the last place team in the division last year, right? So, like, I view them as the last place team. So that's how I feel about it. They're going to have to show me. I mean, I think when they came in 20 and they beat the Steelers in the playoffs and been through all those picks and they scored all those points that they, with Baker and Stefanski wasn't even here, he had COVID, you know, and I think that they thought that they were on their way and they've done nothing. They've done nothing since then. So, whereas the Steelers like limped into the playoffs in Ben's last year and then, you know, recovered from a 2-6 train wreck where everything that could have gone wrong went wrong the first half of last year, from TJ getting hurt to the, you know, Trubisky being too afraid, to Kenny throwing a bunch of picks. And then they went, 7-2 down the stretch, and were mathematically alive in week 18, which looked like it was never going to happen in week 9. So, you know, I think the Steelers are, I think they're a notch below the AFC's elite, but I think the gap is a little narrower now than it was a year ago.
Will Graves is our guest. He's with the Associated Press in Pittsburgh, covering all things sports up there with yins and not all summer long. Decent summer for both of our cities in baseball, but certainly the football thing awaiting. So I intentionally didn't bother any of you guys out of town back in January, February, March, April. You know, seeing the Lamarathon, all aspects of it, the social media part, the no agent right. part, the Ravens part, the tagging part, like all that happened. Give me a little overview as to what you saw from 258 miles away in the division, where this was like crazy turmoil here in an off season where the organization took this on. And then in the end, and I guess we can debate this, Lamar won big to me. No, there were no other bidders. They were bidding against themselves. They gave him basically everything he wanted, maybe more of a 3-year guarantee than a 5-year guarantee. But he hadn't been on the field in 3 years in January. Like, it really was an amazing thing to watch, and it's amazing to see. I don't know, it was inspiration, desperation. The Ravens had nowhere to go, and he had nowhere right. to go. And here they are doing singing Kumbaya. But I don't know that they're winning a Super Bowl, and that makes me a bad guy in Baltimore to say that I don't really believe that Lamar Jackson's going to beat Mahomes, Burrow, Rodgers, just name any of these guys in 4 games down the stretch in January, or whether he'll be healthy enough. So, and they're going to throw the ball more. So there's a lot of changes here, man.
I mean, I think that there was, look, I do some TV here. I do some radio stuff here that, you know, we talked a lot about Lamar. The perception here was like, what are the Ravens waiting for and what is he waiting for? Because it did not seem like there was any mathematical way that it was going to end up with him getting paid in another city. Like it didn't make any, it was just a bunch of needless time wasting drama designed to create content for people like us. Right. I mean, like that is the marginal, oh, I asked for a trade. Oh, we're offering this. I mean, sort of the back and forth in the media.
Well, hang on for a second. To the unsophisticated for him was in the off season to say, Watson got all that money and everybody bid for him. What's going to be different a year later? Well, that I mean, that's the shocking part of all of it, is that everybody went crazy for Watson, who you've already said can't play, and no.
Well, that's the problem. But that's the problem. I think, you know, people like the Browns ruined it for 31 teams should be suing the Browns for what they did with Deshaun Watson. They should, you know, I mean, it was the anti-collusion. I mean, it was literally like the one flyer that upsets the tea cart, who gives a guy who has never done anything in the playoffs, guaranteed 250, whatever it was, 58 million guaranteed money. And I think when you saw all the stuff, all the fallout of that, and teams are like, I don't care who it is outside of maybe Mahomes or Burrow. Like, to your point, Lamar, as electric as he is, you know, in January, still has to prove himself. So has to be healthy late enough in the season to be able to prove himself. There's certainly, you know, the knock has been for years. And look, I'll be honest with you. It drives me nuts. Because I lived in Louisville before I worked for the AP in Louisville before I moved to Pittsburgh. So I've always, and since I left in 2011, I still keep tabs on the football program, the basketball program there. I mean, Lamar won a Heisman Trophy. I mean, he can throw the ball. Like, the idea that he can't throw the ball has always kind of annoyed me a little bit. It seems to be like, Part of the problem is they haven't had anybody that can really catch the ball, right? I mean, they haven't had an elite receiver. So the idea that Lamar is somehow defective, I still think he is a really good quarterback, where his, I still think his best playing days are ahead of him, where he becomes a more complete quarterback. That being said, I it's hard to blame him when the Ravens are asking, when you know what you're getting asked for in return for a trade. Like, why, after seeing what happened with Deshaun Watson, it is a risky bet for a franchise. You sell a lot of if you go somewhere else, he sells a lot of jerseys, but who knows what they're going to have around him. I think that he knew in his heart of hearts that he was coming back, and I think the Ravens knew that he was coming back, and it was just kind of, I mean, I view the whole thing as unnecessary, and it shows the importance of having, like, representation, like, the whole time, right? Like finding a professional to handle this business for you so that you can, avoid this kind of, like, stupid bad. I mean, it was just
in the end, he might have convinced Jim Irsay or Miami or Tampa at some point. In the end, if he had the right agent, there at least would have been a discussion that, to my knowledge, never existed. Couldn't right. possibly exist. It just couldn't be done in that, maybe the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, like, there would have been some sort of at least bid on him that if he didn't want to be here, he could have at least gotten his escape hatch, gotten a better tax situation in Florida or right. Nashville or one. And I don't think the Titans really wanted him. I just don't think Vrabel wanted to sign up for that kind of an offense. But I would say there were options. So in February, for you to just say, wow, it's a foregone conclusion, I don't know, man. I think
I'm telling you, that's
what ready to live without him, and he was ready to live without the Ravens for real if Uncle Arthur Blank would have written a $230 million check.
Yeah, but I think that, I don't know. Like, I just never, when we talked about it here, and I remember once I do a Sunday night show, and we were talking about, is it better for the Steelers if Lamar signs the tender or stays for 1 year and is unhappy or is in another division? And the Steelers feel like, well, we sort of have, our record's pretty good against Lamar. I'd be happy if Lamar stays in Baltimore. The problem is, and while that might be true on the surface, Lamar's really good against just about every other team in the league when he plays, right? So to me, if the Ravens are big picturing this, like they didn't have a backup plan. They didn't have somebody in there that was going to be able to do what he did. So are you going to eat 2 or 3 years looking for another guy? So to me, it made no sense on the Ravens end to get rid of him. I know you want to get him at a team friendly price, but I mean, like I said, you can blame the Browns for that. I mean, like, the Browns gave a guy that's not as good as Lamar more money, right? I mean, it's like an obscene amount of money. So, I think it's good for the division. I think it's, I mean, I think, and I think, to be honest with you, I think Baltimore and Pittsburgh, we were just talking about, baseball teams, hitting peaks and then going straight into the valley. Look, I love the swagger that Joe Burrow brings. I do not trust that ownership situation at all in terms of getting the people in place to sustain it after they have to pay him. They've already lost guys on the back end of their defense. What's going to happen? Are they going to find somebody to replace Higgins? Because, he's going to go get his money elsewhere next year. I think the Ravens and the Steelers are the best in the division, two of the best teams in football, and playing the long game. And that is why it never made sense to me that they would have been willing to blow it up and take a flyer on somebody and start over and basically say, we're going to punt on the next 2 years. That's not the way that Ravens do business, at least from my perspective, because it's much the way that the Steelers don't do business from my perspective. They, for better or for worse, they're going to go for it every single year. That is just how they are designed. And the Ravens, I did not see a situation where Baltimore would be willing to say, let Joey B and Pickett and Deshaun Watson fight over this bone for a couple of years, and we'll go into the wilderness and hope we can come out with another guy that can do 75% of the guy that we just replaced. So that, to me, is why I just did not see it as a real plausible thing that the Ravens were going to move on from Lamar.
Well, I always appreciate your time and insights into all of this and professionally covering things up in Pittsburgh. I'm taking a deep dive for everybody wondering. I'm going to get to Cincinnati, get to Cleveland in the next couple of weeks as well as we look at the enemy and know the enemy. Hey, I still have massive respect for the Steelers. I am not the guy that thinks the Steelers are the last place team, but it It is a long off season talking about all this, right? Like yeah, let's get to camp and start playing some football here. And hey, the Ravens play on the road in all three places in the first 6 weeks of the season. So we're going to find out what the Ravens have under the hood. Enjoy the summer. Bring down some Primanti's. I'll hook you up with some crab cakes. I got my Papa shirt on here. World famous crab cakes, Oprah's crab cakes. So come on back down to Maryland and bring the kid down here to Camden Yards. We got good baseball for you, Will.
I'm looking forward to it.
Will Graves from the Associated Press. Follow him out on Twitter and follow him at the Associated Press as well for all things Pittsburgh sports as we get to know our enemy. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.